It takes a courageous man to marry a woman with a mind.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club, led by three women with minds, and at least on some days. And we read and review the most popular, most recommended, most discussed books on the internet, and we give really honest reviews about them, especially for busy people like us. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. And for this week, we are delving into maybe a busy girl's winner in the sense of the length of it. It is The Unselected Journals of Emma M. Lyon, Volume 1. We only read the first one. It's like 107 pages, so super, super short. But basically the premise of the book is it is the journal of Emma M. Lyon, who lives in late 1800s London. And her parents have died, and she's expected to inherit this kind of house in London, but she hasn't reached her majority yet. So her cousin is taking care of it for her, not her cousin by blood, but by marriage. And there's some interesting things that happen with him and the sexism she kind of experiences of the times. And she's kind of like an odd duck kind of character who is ahead of her time, a woman who speaks her mind and makes brash jokes and rubs some people the wrong way, but also is such a fun, loving character. And it's her journey toward kind of adulthood and inheriting this house and inheriting her family's legacy and what she has to deal with her leftover family.
And yeah. Catherine just said as many words as are in the entire book.
It's hard to describe the book.
Very character driven. We'll say that. So it starts with Emma, and then we just follow.
We weren't at that question yet, Casey.
Sorry to spoil.
Yes, it's character driven. It's a fucking journal. Of course, it's character driven. Yes,
it is epistolary, and it is written in old timey lingo. I'm sure there's a more sophisticated way to say that, but
right. But not quite at the level of Jane Austen.
No, it's like a very modernized version of
like the way they talk in
Victorian English.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, do you guys have reviews from the internet?
Yes. I just found mine. I got two. One is 4 stars. Well, that was delightful. Looking forward to interspersing these into my TBR as a palate cleanser, which is exactly what I have been doing. And then another 4-star, act for one's own good or be crushed by the uncertainties of the future is the motto I live by.
Real?
If you need to look at the lingo that this girl uses in the book.
I have a few short ones that are all very sweet because that's kind of the tone of the book is like loving misadventure. So the first one is 5 stars. It says, a delight, capitalized, italicized in spirit.
Yes.
You know. The next one is just a sentence out of a longer review, but it says, a delightful little sugar cube of a story. Cute. Mm-hmm. And then this one just made me say, aw, but it's 5 stars. And it says, I do believe I have found my new best friend.
Oh.
Aw.
I know. I was like, cute.
Y'all went cute. I immediately went to the 1 stars to see what people were saying.
I couldn't take it.
That's so
weird. Like, if you hated this book, you'll see. I didn't even give it 5 stars. But if you hated this book, it wasn't a waste of your time. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Right. No, this person DNF'd this book.
What? That's just lazy. Okay, I'm sorry.
If you can't finish a 100-page book, you might be the problem.
Yeah. So it's a 1-star review on Goodreads. DNF, not for me. I prefer a book with a plot. Actually, there was a tiny bit of plot. Does she ever get her money from Cousin Archibald? I'll never know.
You didn't have to read that much further.
Right. He was right next to finding out. Okay, anyway, this is a book that has, I think it's written a while ago. I mean, not ton of time ago, but it's not like a new series, but it's been sort of like picked up by Book Talk and it's become really popular. So the whole series is like, the first book is the shortest, but there's like 8 total books and they're all like roughly 200 to 250 pages. So anyway, that's just to preface that. It's a long series, but they're all very short. And the overall Goodreads rating is 4 out of 5. The Fable rating is 3.94 out of 5. And the Storygraph is 4 out of 5. What did you guys think?
I am exactly on line with what the mass reviewers gave it, which is a 4 out of 5. I thought it was a very cute book. I love Emma. She is one of my favorite female main characters because she is complex and eccentric, which I love in a woman. And despite it being so short, it took me a while to read it. And I don't really know why, but I did feel like very passionately about Emma and wanting her to succeed and feeling slighted for her because she is so slighted by her family. And I was very mad about that. So, but this book is a good palate cleanser in between books. So I like ended up reading like 3 books this week. And so I just read it in between the books I was reading for pleasure and for fun and not for this podcast. Cause I have a long TBR and it made me nervous. So I wanted to read more books.
3 books is wild. I'm so jealous.
I know. It's a good week.
Yeah. Oh, Caitlin, do you want me to go next? I also gave the book 4 stars, but I have blown through them. I have been reading like on average a book a day. I'm now on the 8th installment of the series. Yeah, I've been reading them.
I love when I suggest something that just hits Casey's like perfect little
I cannot explain to you how much I love this series. Like, I actually feel like I have to like be serious and very earnest about it. Like, it's genuinely one of my favorite series I've ever read. And I'm really glad that I found it.
Flabbergasted.
So thank you, Caitlin, because I feel like this series has genuinely brought me so much like joy and happiness. So yeah, I mean, I think that's the best review I could give it. The first book is not as good as the books that come after. It's kind of an introduction, but I still enjoyed the first book. Actually, like Catherine, this book took me like 3 days to finish, which is a long time for, you know, a 100-page book that I really liked. But it is, I think, the perfect cozy series because it has all these super lovable characters, but there's very serious themes underlying the more lighthearted plot. And this book was so hard to finish because the sexism in it was driving me insane. Like, Emma is in these really difficult situations through no fault of her own. No one's helping her. Like, it really shows you the plight of a woman in this world that didn't have relatives who were really looking out for her, like all the things that could happen to a woman when the people who were in charge of her were not looking out for her best interest. And so even though Emma is like a great, amazing character who I definitely think is inspired by Jane Austen, and you know, the Emma that we have also reviewed and loved, it's really sad and heartbreaking at some points. And I had to put the book down because I was like, I can't live in this feeling right now. But I still loved it.
So I, yes, suggested this book. A couple of my friends have blown through the series. I read the first one, I think, over a lunch hour, honestly. It did not take me 3 days. I blew freaking through it. Maybe I should have savored it more. Maybe that's the key. And I immediately picked up the second and I'm halfway through it. It's just like on my phone and I read it when I need to pick something up. But it's been busy. So like, yeah, it's taken me a while to get through a small book. However, when I looked on Goodreads, I gave it a 3. Honestly, I think it's because I was so angry. It was so short. Like, I don't think since I was reading it on my Kindle that I realized just how short it was. And then it just stopped. And I think I like gave it a 3 because I was so mad it ended so quickly, which is a good thing, I guess. I don't know. Like the first, I feel like I already liked the second book more than the first book halfway through it. So
yeah, this first book is just sort of like a nibble of a story.
It's the world building. It's the setting. Yeah. It's the quirky town and the quirky people in it. And then in book 2, you like really get Emma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I immediately picked up the second book and I'm like 10% in it, obviously, because mm-hmm. it's a very quick book, but it's only a few chapters in and I already am loving the vibe of the second book.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've already kind of answered this, but is it more plot or character driven?
It's a journal.
Yeah. I mean, the plot is technically Emma's money troubles and also just sort of her life in society, trying to have independence when, you know, the whole universe around her is set up to disempower women. Mm-hmm. And it's also just about the quirky factors of her life. So, yeah. Yes.
I mean, she's probably one of the only women that gets to inherit a house in London.
Yeah.
When she's 21.
True. I was looking because I was like, I feel like I read this at a time. Sorry, this is like off topic, but at a time that I needed a palate cleanser. And yes, it cleansed Heated Rivalry out of me before we read We Love You, Bunny.
You should have saved it for after We Love You, Bunny.
Yeah, I should have, because after that was Strength of the Few, Buckeye, and Girl on Girl.
Jesus.
Also, I feel like we should describe the books actually go through every single day. And the journal entries are very, very short some days and a little bit longer others. But every single day has an entry. So you literally like live every single day of her life.
The physical books are so cute.
Yes.
Oh, they are really cute. And it comes into play later because, anyway, this isn't really a spoiler, but she gets her journal rebound and the books look sort of like her journal being rebound. And I was like, mm-hmm. oh, that's so cute.
They are adorable. I kind of want them for my shelf, even though they're on Kindle Unlimited.
Yeah, it's on Kindle Unlimited, so I can't like justify that purchase. But at the same time, they're very, very
cute. And like, I normally am not a huge fan of journal driven stories.
Yeah,
I'm not either. I think the trick is that Emma is a storytelling character and that really comes through in the book. So a lot of her journal entries are written more like narratives instead of just reflections.
Right. And I feel like especially like the three of us, like in that time period, we would be Emma.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I related to her so hardcore. Even in my
it would be like, screw the patriarchy. Give me my bag.
Yeah. I think that's the issue with like journal entry driven narratives is that it requires a character that you can connect with deeply. And even if it's not like a character that's lovable, because sometimes like you can have a really good morally gray character, but you need a character in which your audience can feel a deep, deep connection to in order to live in their head rent free.
Yes. And also like be able to communicate details in an interesting way. Because also the point of Emma's journal isn't just for her musings. It's that she wants to record the activities and the occurrences of her life. So she's not just talking about like, I felt like this. She's also like, here are the little literal stories and like dialogue that like I experienced today. And so I think that helps too.
Yeah.
Okay. So another question we've already answered, but would you read other books by the author? I'm almost done with the 8 installment thing. So yeah, I would.
I'm on book 2 and I hope to finish them all.
Same. Yeah. It's going to be my in-between palate cleansers for all of our busy girls books for the near future.
Yeah. I'm already thinking about trying to do a like life tandem read where I read one entry every day. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I was excited when she got to my birthday. I was like, oh, what does she do on my birthday?
our friend, our joint friend, the other Caitlin, got to read. She did this thing where she got Dracula by email by date. So that's she read exactly Dracula.
Yeah.
Like on the dates entered in Dracula, and she loved it.
Yeah. Okay. Another thing we've already talked about a lot, but how is the pacing? How long did it take you to read? It did take me 3 or 4 days, even though it's only 100 pages. And I loved it.
I read it over lunch.
It took me a week to read. So I don't know. I just was reading other things and also just, you know, slowly taking little chunks out of it, but it was a lovely book. So no complaints.
Last question. Would you watch a movie or TV show of this book? I would pay so much money to get a movie of this made, or like a 8-episode special series. Like, I would kill for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me like the BBC version of
Pride. Yes.
Like, yes. Either BBC or like Masterpiece by PBS.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. They would do a good job with this. I think they should do it.
I would eat this up.
In the era of Bridgerton, this would be such a win, an easy win. Such a win.
And I love Bridgerton, but I think this book series is overall a better story than, you know, the series that Bridgerton is based on and this what we have of Bridgerton. So I was like, guys, come on, do this next. Anyway, I'm obviously obsessed. Do you guys have a busy girl rating?
It's a 5.
Yeah, 5. I can't imagine giving it less than a 5.
Like we said, if you can't finish this, you need to like go see someone about your ADHD.
And I'm not saying you have to love it as much as we did, but you should be able to finish.
Yeah, it's 107 pages, y'all.
Like, you probably read like more like on TikTok than that.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, if you set aside 2 hours of doom scroll time, you can finish the book. Also, I think the journal entries do make it a really easily pick up, put down book, because there's many like ends that are like easy stopping points and easy to pick up afterwards.
Yes.
Okay. That brings us to our spoiler alert section. I can't. It's so funny trying not to spoil a 100-page book because everything feels like, I don't know, it just happens really fast. But there is a lot of things that happen and many characters introduced and a neighborhood that is a compelling character in and of itself. So don't let us spoil it for you. Experience it for yourself and come back.
Hey, wow. Obviously, we are all fans of our heroine, Emma M. Lyon. So let's talk about our girl.
I love her. She's so independent, spunky, sassy. I think she's something I've been missing as fantasy has been giving us very angry female main characters. Which I think there's nothing wrong with. Like, I love female rage too, but I feel like there's been a little bit lack of diversity in personalities. And this, I think, gave us a heroine, sort of like an Emily Wilde, who's very strong, very independent, and who really owns herself as a form of like empowerment and feminism rather than just being loud and angry, as if that's like what empowerment is. And so, yeah.
It almost feels like she's a feminist just by living life, because she just lives life so unapologetically herself in a time period that's not okay. Like, you're supposed to fit like a mold of what a lady is and of society's mold. And she has just fully decided, no, I'm just going to say what I think and do what I want and no one can stop me. And I'm not going to be like bitter or angry about society. I'm just going to be here and live in this space and take up space in a place that would not allow me to do so. But she just seems to not even notice society at all, which is just so refreshing.
She seemed to found this little eclectic group of people that like love her for that, which I adore. Even like, and I know we'll talk about her in a little bit, but like Aunt Eugenia totally is like, please stop, but also is like chuckling under her breath the whole time she's around Emma, like so loves her personality despite her chaos. I want to think if I lived in this time period in this situation, I would be Emma. Like, is exactly who I would want to be.
Right. She's not, like Catherine said, she's not trying to get back at people. I think she's also a good example of a protagonist who is sort of like living everyday feminism, but isn't like an activist. Like, she's not campaigning. She's not trying to like change the fabric of the world, but she's also refusing to let the world shape her into something more convenient. And so, yeah, like I said, it's like very empowering to see someone just be themselves. And because that was the ultimate, you know, fuck you to the patriarchy at that time. But she doesn't do it angrily.
No.
She is clearly in this period of like finding herself, making sure she is set up for life, and is just like accidentally charming men right and left. And I just think it's the funniest thing. Like, basically, it's like, oh no, I've charmed a man again. Dang.
Yeah. The amount of she doesn't have like a romantic love interest in this first book, but the amount of men that are like literally fawning after her, it's just like, how many love interests are you going to have, Emma? Men are just dropping in front of you.
Yeah. It's kind of a good example of, I think, two things. I mean, A, if you're show up as yourself, you're going to be memorable because everyone else is showing up trying to fit the mold. But also like, you'll never have like every friend, but you'll have all the right ones. And part of the whole premise of the series is like all these sort of magical and crazy and interesting things happen to her because she shows up as like a magical, crazy, interesting person. Yeah,
just herself and accidentally charms an entire population of people.
And then other magical, interesting, charming, crazy people gravitate towards her. And so her life becomes sort of interesting. Interesting unfolding of insane circumstances.
Well, and that leads into the next question is, you kind of mentioned the setting, and it's almost a character in itself. Like, her house has a name, Lapis Lazuli House. And she lives in this like St. Crispin's neighborhood that has this place where lost items turn up. It has a ghost. Like, it has a group of like frat boys that heckle the pastor. Like, it's so quirky and fun. And it's like the perfect place for her to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this little like section of England, London.
When I heard that there's like legitimately a ghost, like, this is not a joke. This is not like a paranormal plot line. Like, there's just a ghost that everyone loves. And then objects just go missing and they have to come track them down because things just show up in their neighbors' houses. I was like, I'm going to love this book. Like, it was so cute. Like,
what's the ghost called? I cannot remember.
The Roman.
That's right. The Roman.
Yeah. So many three-dimensional details that are just like very interesting and lovable. Yeah,
and then she has to explain like some people have to buy their way onto a list where you have to deliver their objects directly to them instead of going to the normal shop and just dropping it off on a shelf. Like, it's just so funny and quirky, but it also kind of forces the neighbors to get to know each other in a way. Like, in this day and age where like a lot of people don't know their neighbors, and I'm one of those people where it's just like you kind of just live day to day. You don't really live with a community. This felt like a community in which they all kind of take care of each other and care about one another in their own like little eccentric ways. And the fact that like Emma had these two very loving parents who are also like huge figures in this community, so they're all kind of taking care of her too. Like, they're being like, oh, I remember your dad, I remember your mom, I'm going to make sure that you are remembered and loved and taken care of. And so it's super wholesome and sweet. And it just reminds me of like a nice warm hug or like drinking a cup of hot chocolate by a fire and reading. Like, it's just so nice.
Well, and another part of the community is it is wealthier. So there is help in the house, and the way that Emma treats the housekeeper in the book is like such a sign of a good character because she is so kind and they're almost like little besties. It's really cute.
Yeah.
And obviously the housekeeper has run-ins with the ghost and the neighborhood, and they kind of like do it together for a little bit, conspire together. And it's very sweet.
It also leads into what is like technically the main conflict, which is Emma's fight to keep the house. You know, her dad was an artist and they were considered, her mom was a lady. So she's kind of at this really interesting point in the middle class where she's sort of part of the upper classes and sort of part of the more like working middle class. And so her parents left her a modest amount of money, basically just enough that she thought that she would be able to live independently and she wouldn't have to get married and she could kind of live like a humble life, but without many of the worries of the women of her time period. And then of course, we know Cousin Archibald's spent her fortune because out of spite, essentially. Because he basically injured, like ruining her prospects as
he was injured by her.
Mm-hmm. He bought robes.
Yeah, he bought silk mourning robes. That's how he spent the fortune. And then bet on races with injured horses.
And despite that, she seems almost most upset that he won't let her in the library because that was the only part he was left.
It drove me insane, actually, how tolerant she was of Cousin Archibald.
Yeah.
I was like, kill him. He actually, like, actually deeply has ruined her life. I mean, and it's not ruined because she's going to fix it and she's not refusing to see things that way. But from an objective observer, especially given the time period and the limitations on women, he has ruined her life. It's maddening. And he just gets away with it.
Well, because he kept mentioning his scar and everything. And I was like, she should give him a new one.
Yeah. I was
matching
like,
set.
And I know she's trying to like work within the parameters of the time period so she can secure all this. Mm-hmm. And she's real lucky that the banker is actually quite helpful. But yeah, me, like the fantasy girly, is like, where's the revenge plot? When is it coming?
Exactly. When does he get his comeuppance?
And his butler. Man, I hate the butler.
I want him fired too.
Yeah, the butler is in leagues with Cousin Archibald, unfortunately. And also, that was another crazy plot point, is Emma found out how unfair the payments in the house were, that Agnes, the female cook, was being paid way less than their butler, who like doesn't do anything. Another thing that she rectified, thank God.
I think that was in the next book.
Oh, sorry. For book one and book two, blur together a little.
But still.
Not a spoiler, it's a fact.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, and so she thought that she was going to be able to kind of have her independence and live in the house. And now she's basically fighting to keep hold of the house because she
From the attic.
Yes. 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 And relegated by the man who ruined her fortune to live in the fucking attic.
With the mice.
Yeah. And she's like, I don't know, I kind of like it here.
Yeah. She's just like people watching from the window, vibing.
That is what this book is. It is just a giant people watching experiment.
Yes, it really is, from Emma's perspective, which is a great perspective to be watching them from.
It's such a fantastical perspective because she is just so eccentric and recognizes the interesting and eccentricities of everyone else around her. And it's so fun.
And even the villains, and there are villains in the series, are still sort of lovable in their ridiculousness. Like even Cousin Archibald, who is like objectively just like the worst person in the world, is kind of funny and silly in his own way. Like, it's almost like he's so selfish and terrible that you can't blame him for just being selfish and terrible. Like, it's just who he is.
Did you guys ever watch The Aristocats?
Yes.
Yeah. He reminds me of that, like, butler guy in it that takes the cats.
Yeah, I know.
That's like what I picture it. I'm so sorry.
Crazy. That's a crazy little connection you made there.
Yeah.
Okay, but like it fits.
Yeah. I see in the doc, Catherine literally wrote down, what did you think of Cousin Archibald? How about him being a petty bitch?
He's a petty bitch.
Petty bitch. If I thought someone spent my fortune on mourning robes of all things, I mean, Jesus, at least buy something nice. At least some gorgeous furniture for the house.
Yeah. Like, well, the crazy part is that like when she went to him to finally, frankly, discuss the finances, the whole time he's just like, the audacity of you to be discussing money as a woman. That's so unladylike. And she's like, well, we can sell your mourning robes. And he's like, how dare you? And it's just like, you bought so many of them. So yeah, you should sell them.
Yeah. Well, that brings us kind of nicely to the second kind of villain in the story, which is Aunt Eugenia, who is the wealthy.
Say earlier, who's the other? Okay, never mind. Which aunt is which? Which one's Arabella's mom?
Aunt Eugenia.
Okay, who's the other aunt that she lived with?
Oh, that. Yeah, that's technically, I think. I don't know that they're officially related. They're not technically related. She was just living with them because Aunt Eugenia and Arabella were not in the country.
That's right. There are too many wicked old women.
Yeah. Preach. Anyway, so Aunt Eugenia is her, is Emma's maternal aunt. So Emma's mom sort of stepped down in society to marry Emma's dad, who was an artist. So Aunt Eugenia stayed in society and married very well and is this wealthy noblewoman. And her daughter, Arabella, is Emma's cousin, and they love each other very much, and it's very cute. But Arabella is sort of like the diamond of the season, to use Bridgerton language. She's just beautiful, beautiful, wealthy girl. What did you guys think?
Also, literally doesn't care, is just in it for the bag.
Yes. Yeah, she's like, I plan to. It's actually really cute because she's like, Emma, I have to marry well so that you can live with us.
And I'm yes. like, she's just like, you're going to come with us, right?
And Emma's she's a girl's like, girl.
Yeah. And I like it because she's, you know, she's a foil to Emma in the sense that she has a lot of the similar stressors to Emma and has chosen to deal with them in a different way, but has also maintained the core of herself, just only shows it to select people.
She is working within society instead of what Emma is doing, which is just working against the tide of society.
Without society, yes. Ignoring society's presence.
Yeah.
Well, and she, I feel like she probably embodies a lot of ladies of the ton, you know, like mm-hmm. I am here, so I'm going to enjoy my nice dresses and my balls and my teas. And unfortunately, that means I have to eventually marry a man and bear him children. But otherwise, I will be left to my own devices. And so I will marry well.
She's seeking a different kind of freedom, which is limited, but more realistic in a sense. I thought it was interesting that Emma is supposed to be her foil. Like, Emma is constantly catching strays of people being like, you, the pretty, but not pretty as your cousin one, we're going to bring you around so that everyone notices how beautiful Arabella yeah. is.
But I loved her and Aunt Eugenia's conversations where it was just like capitalized and in italics. Like, it was just so cute because she obviously was riling her aunt up. And even though her aunt was easily riled, you could tell there was love there, where she's just like, mm-hmm. she's an intelligent foil to a lot of the women who don't get to experience their, like, to show their intelligence or show their, like, personalities. So it's a way for them.
I shouldn't laugh, but I want to.
Yes.
Right. Because the core of it is Arabella has agreed to at least pretend to be moldable so that she can choose where she wants to put her foot down and not. And Emma has just chosen to pretend that the mold she's trying to be fit into doesn't exist. So Aunt Eugenia is quite frustrated that she can't get Emma to do what she wants her to do.
But has hired her to be Arabella's foil for the season. Yeah.
She does get a new wardrobe out of it. Mm-hmm. And so now she looks the part of a woman of society, despite being not really totally invited.
Right. Of humble means.
Of humble she means is. And of Irish means, because they keep mentioning
Portuguese her. Means.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Portuguese and Irish. And they keep mentioning how she's an Irish bastard. At least yeah. Cousin Archibald does. And I'm like, damn right, she's an Irish bastard. I claim her. I claim her, people. Yes.
So yeah. She gets the means to work about the society, but she's actually just there to make Arabella look better.
Yes. Yes. I can't remember if this is in volume one or two, so stop me if I'm getting ahead of myself. But one of my favorites in the books, one of my favorite scenes in the books is talking about this point, and it comes from Roland.
Book two.
Okay. I'll save my comments then. And our next question.
We don't meet him until book two.
Yeah. But he's interesting.
The teas and things do not start. We just hear the proposition that she is going to have to accompany Arabella to all of these things. And that's why I was kind of infuriated. That's when it ended.
Yeah, it ended with her receiving the calling cards.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I know where we are. There's so much to come. Okay, so one of the sort of teases in the book that we think will become important, but we don't get a lot of information right at the start, is that there's a new tenant in the house. So
in this like really narrow section of the house that was just walled off and is like, I don't know, box, like a stack of boxes this person lives in.
Yeah.
Of course, how they describe the house. I love it.
Yeah, this like ill-fated construction project that Cousin Archibald was convinced would like help them make money to like rent but, out. Like,
might actually be her only hope.
Right. And so there's all this stress because they really actually do need a tenant now, even though Archibald did a terrible job. So Lapis Lazuli Minor, as they call it, is not really a great place to live or going to get the amount of money that they needed to get. They did find someone.
Yeah.
Someone involved in war, I guess, because the Roman seems to think so. Mysterious
man who happens to, of all the floors, take up residence also in the attic so that they share a wall.
And they talk about mice.
And she just kind of like sees him out the window limping through town at odd hours. And it sounds very like suspicious. It's very Scooby-Doo. Like she's like, who is this?
Yes. And he's described as a storm cloud. Always in this thunderous language. Sort of broody, but attractive man.
With I was about to say, attractive was the key word there.
A very attractive, mysterious man who's now passing notes to her through a wall.
Yeah. A handbook.
No, that's in the first book.
That's first. It is. Because it's the mice and the cat, right?
Okay. Yes. I didn't remember. I thought that happened in the second book. Yes, he brings a cat.
That the cat hasn't come up yet, but the letters, I believe, started.
So.
All very mysterious. They have not talked in person.
No.
Yet another very funny little quirk that she's passing notes through a wall, which is also quite improper for the time to have so little privacy between a man's room and a woman's room, even though they can't get to each other.
It becomes one of my favorite plot points in book two. Yeah.
It's great. It's very funny. And it's how they get to know each other, right? Before anything else happens. Okay, so it seems like we're all like mysterious positive on the tenant. Any other male characters that stood out to you guys that you think could become love interests?
Young Hawks.
Oh, yes, the pastor.
Yeah. Young
Hawks, yeah.
He's who is like, somehow super charming and has all these like friends from
Cambridge.
Cambridge, yeah.
Yeah. From his illustrious education that
apparently gives amazing sermons.
Right. And he's like, does like poetry in addition to like Bible readings. So like everyone loves his sermons because they're not like stuffy and dry.
Not a love interest, but her friend Mary has this cousin escorting her around suddenly. And also trying to work within the system as a single woman. He's very suspicious.
Yep.
Yes. Possibly a very bad actor on the scene. I was very stressed about his potential role in everything.
Yes. I don't know. And then you know she's just going to meet a bunch of men with Arabella and they're all going to be like supposed to be there for Arabella. And you know, you just know that they're all going to be some, like many of them interested.
He's like a flame in their moths.
All right. Well, we know Caitlin had issues with the ending. I personally didn't, since I knew I could get the next for free immediately. So I did.
Yeah.
I was really content with it. I thought it was a really good introduction to the series. And I think it didn't ever do too much or too little. I feel like I've complained a lot recently about editing and stories kind of being disorganized. And I think part of why I've loved these so much is they're very petite. And everything is sort of like a fun diversion, but with as few words wasted as possible.
Yes. Well, do you guys have book recommendations? I would like to call dibs on, dang it.
Yes.
Emily Wilde. Yeah, I was about to say Emily Wilde.
Oh, I thought, well. Never mind. I was going to say Emma.
No, I said Emma.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I call Emily Wilde then.
Well,
Jane Austen. There's a family in the book series with the last name March. So there's more than one Austen reference.
Yes. Emma is definitely, her name is an Austen reference because.
Yes.
I feel like if you pulled that Emma out of the countryside and plopped her in this situation, that's exactly what you would get.
Yep.
I'm gonna say Emma also because
oh, no. Okay, well then I'll change to Pride and Prejudice, but obviously this
she's far more Emma than Elizabeth.
Yes, she is. But I think Pride and Prejudice brings in a little bit more of the kind of social concerns, and so you know, Elizabeth mm-hmm. is
you get more of the Mary, the Arabella of it.
Right. Yeah, multiple overcrossing love stories with meddling siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, cool. I think that's it. This was so fun. I want to do more of these volumes just to talk about it with you guys because I've been really loving them. And
the girls online are also loving them. So
they're perfect. Like, maybe we can find a way. Yeah.
Look for our palate cleanser episodes, guys.
Yeah. Whenever we get really behind in our reading, we will probably drop in more of these. So
you are not wrong.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Also, more fantasy on the horizon, friends. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Returning to our old ways. Okay. Well, you guys can follow us online at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere, or busygirls.com or busygirlspod.com. We love hearing from you guys. Slide into our DMs. Let us know what you're liking, not liking. Give us a book to recommend or to read, and we will try to do so. And please rate and review our podcast.
Yeah. And so with that, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.